You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The Security Council Committee that reviews UN membership applications met for the first time yesterday to consider the Palestinian application for UN recognition. The meeting came exactly 1 week after Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas took the Palestinian bid for independence to the UN. In doing so, he circumvented peace negotiations that hold out little hope of achieving a genuine peace. The U.S. and Israel object to the move, insisting on a negotiated peace agreement first. After the meeting, Indian Ambassador Hardeep Singh Puri underscored his country's support of the Palestinians' bid. He said his country was the first non-Arab state to grant recognition of a Palestinian state in 1988. Scores of other nations also support the bid. To help us understand where things stand with this initiative, we are joined on the phone from New York by Mesa Zarob. She is legal researcher and advocacy officer for Al-Haq, a Palestinian NGO based in Ramallah. Hello, Mesa, and welcome to Red Eye.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Can you give us a little background to this bid? What was the impetus for these September initiatives?
Sure. I think the most important thing to highlight here is that after decades of negotiation that have unfortunately led nowhere and have failed to improve the human rights situation of the Palestinian people on the ground, I think it was time for a new era or a new approach, a new way of trying to claim legal avenues that would be able to grant the Palestinians more access to claiming their rights.
What are the prospects that this bid will succeed?
Well, of course, we're all aware that when it comes to the Security Council, there are political questions at stake. So there's two things that need to be taken into consideration. First of all, is that the Palestinian leadership will need 9 votes in the Security Council that would support their bid for UN membership in order for this to move forward. The second required element would be the absence of a U.S. veto. Now, we probably all know that that is very unlikely to happen, the U.S. to refrain from using its veto. But what we've seen on the ground is actually that the U.S. has been trying to put pressure on several states to ensure that there will be no 9 votes in favor of Palestinian membership. In that case, the U.S. would not have to use its veto, and it tries not to isolate itself from the international community by using its veto.
Obama spoke last week at the UN, and as did Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority. Were you surprised by anything that they said at the UN?
I would say surprised, no. When it comes to President Obama, I was sad. I regretted very much his bias for Israel, his refusal to allow the Palestinian people the same access to legal rights as he would allow to other people in the world, and his stance that peace will not come through resolutions at the United Nations. I think we were not surprised, but we very much regret this stance, and we do not agree, obviously, with his stance, especially in light of the fact that negotiations have not changed the reality on the ground so far. When it comes to President Abbas's speech, I think the Palestinian people, maybe they were surprised a little bit, but positively surprised. I think what they were positively surprised with was the president's reaffirmation of international law, their commitment to international law, the fact that for the first time, maybe ever, he used a very strong language saying, enough is enough, and we've come to a deadlock, and we need to try something else. I think that is something that surprised the Palestinian people positively.
Another speaker was Benjamin Netanyahu. Any comments on what he said?
I think I don't think his speech had much content, and I don't think it was very productive in trying to advance any kind of processes that would lead to claiming rights for every people, be it the Palestinians or the Israelis. And I think one of the things that was maybe a bit surprising is the fact that he said, well, we're all here now, let's negotiate. And that comes just a week after his foreign minister said that they would never commit to even a partial freeze of the settlements, and not even for one day. So it's very difficult to conceive of any negotiations that could take place in a context where systematic violations of international law, including settlement activity, continues on the ground.
You mentioned the prospect of a U.S. veto. Whether it's a veto or the U.S. gathers support against the Palestinian bid among other members of the Security Council, it seems like the U.S. is intent on blocking this initiative. If they do block it, how will the Palestinians proceed then?
Well, there is, of course, different avenues that the Palestinians could pursue. Now, President Abbas has made it very clear that they would try to continue going to the Security Council. They would try to continue this quest for UN membership. However, if we face a U.S. veto, and that is very likely at this point, what the Palestinian leadership could do, and is probably likely to do, is to go to the General Assembly instead and ask for recognition of the Palestinian state. And that is something that at least two-thirds of the members of the General Assembly would probably support.
And what would that...
And then we could have... Yes, yeah, you were wondering what impact that would have.
Exactly, yes.
Now, this could mean, for example, that the status of Palestine could be upgraded to a non-observer state within the system of the EU. They would still not be a member of the United Nations, but they would be an observer state. And that would allow them more political leverage. It would allow them still access to different legal avenues that are reserved to states.
Can you give me an example of the sort of legal avenues that are available if they were to become an observer?
Now, for example, if Palestine was recognized as a state, it could sign on to international treaties and conventions, human rights treaties such as the International Covenant for the Civil and Political Rights. It could sign on to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. It could request an advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice. And all of these legal avenues would be available to the Palestinian people.
You're currently in New York. What kind of support does this initiative enjoy among the broader members of the UN?
Now, the problem here is that we need to distinguish between the members of the General Assembly and the members of the Security Council, because there are different political pressures involved. Now, when it comes to the General Assembly, the Palestinians are not worried about the required support in order to recognize a Palestinian state. There are already 130 states, approximately, that have recognized Palestine as a state. Now, in the Security Council, the dynamics are different, because, as I mentioned before, there are 15 Security Council members, 5 permanent, 10 non-permanent ones, and the 5 permanent ones, including the U.S., have the veto power. So unless we get the 9 votes, we need 9 votes out of the 15 in order to gather support for this bid, and an absence of the veto. So in any case, we're not going to move forward with this, because even if the Palestinian leadership was able to gather 9 votes, the U.S. would still veto this initiative. But I think what the Palestinian leadership is trying to do is to ensure to get these required 9 votes in order to trigger a U.S. veto and put the U.S. in a position where they clearly and once again have to stand up and say, we fight for human rights worldwide, but we make an exception for the Palestinian people. And the last time he used his veto was also in this context, to veto a resolution on the illegality of Israeli settlements, once again isolating himself from the rest of the international community.
There's been talk that this bid could be damaging to Palestine and Palestinians, not least because this bid may exclude Palestinian refugees from re-entering Palestine. Can you comment on those concerns?
Sure. Now, PLO NPA President Mahmoud Abbas has made it very clear in his speech in the General Assembly last week that he's very committed to the refugees and to upholding their rights. Now, one of the things that has been a critique of this initiative is that it's, of course, like you mentioned, said it would exclude refugees. But that is not the case in and of itself. The bid itself will not lead to the derogation of any rights of the Palestinian people, including the refugees. One of the things that needs to be ensured, however, if Palestine is recognized as a state and if Palestine was to at one point acquire UN membership, is that the function and structure of the PLO, of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, is maintained and integrated in the state. In that case, there would be no derogation of Palestinian state, the Palestinian people, of their rights.
I believe you're returning to Ramallah later this week or later today. What are you expecting to see when you return to Palestine? Are people broadly supporting this initiative?
Actually, what we have seen on last Friday after President Abbas held his speech is that he was welcomed a little bit like a hero, certainly very warmly, by the Palestinian people. I believe that he was able for the first time in a long time to actually give them hope, to maybe not make promises with regards to how things will concretely change on the ground, but at least he made a promise that their strategy would change, that their language would change, and that they would stand up to the international community regardless of their limited political leverage and say, we have had enough and we will claim the rights of our people regardless of the political pressures we are subjected to.
And now, whether these initiatives succeed or don't succeed, do you ever see Palestine returning to the previous negotiating model where peace agreements or proposals were brokered by the United States?
Personally, I think it's unlikely that the U.S. can be a genuine and productive broker when it comes to the so-called Middle East peace process. 20 years of negotiations have unfortunately led us nowhere. And the problem lies in the fact that there were never clear parameters of negotiations that were based on international law. International law and some embodiment of justice for Palestinian victims was never a part of the peace process. There was never a real freeze of settlements. There was never a real commitment by the Israeli government to say we respect the rights of the Palestinian people. While we negotiate, we will halt the systematic violations of international law. There was never such a commitment, neither on the side of the Israeli government nor on the side of the U.S. government. So it's very hard to conceive, to imagine that this will change unless the Netanyahu government, backed by the U.S., will say, all right, we will make sure to halt these violations and we will really negotiate on the basis of international law.
Well, Mesa, I know you've been busy down there in New York, and thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Mesa Zerob. She is legal researcher and advocacy officer for Al-Haq, a Palestinian NGO based in Ramallah. You can read more on the Palestinian UN initiative at alhaq.org. That's A-L-H-A-Q.org.